end here. Here I should say the title again. The title is pronounced Max End, Bayesian Ruin Entanglement. Bayesian methods have become a mainstream part of statistics in the last 10 years or so. And Bayesian theory starts from an interpretation of probability. Probabilities are necessarily subjective measures of credible belief. Now, from this unlikely starting point, Bayesian theory develops a large number of very useful and very practical statistical methods. Now, this success story is the motivation for this work. I will start from a Bayesian interpretation of entanglement and end with a potentially useful variant of entanglement purification. So here's my overview. So what I really start with is a paradox, a very ingenious example invented by the Horodetskys 2 years ago that somehow pitches the principle of maximum entropy, which is one of the important principles or methods in Bayesian statistics, against entanglement. And I will show that the Bayesian viewpoint actually resolves this paradox. Then I move on to say how the so-called quantum de Finetti representation helps one to understand unknown quantum states. And finally, I move on to Bayesian entanglement purification. So here is the Jaynes versus Horodetsky controversy. And in this paper, 1999 paper, entitled Entanglement Processing and Statistical Inference, the Jaynes Principle Can Produce Fake Entanglement. This is a strong title. And then in the abstract, they say the Jaynes Statistical Inference Scheme may lead to a wrong conclusion about entanglement. So if you want to apply Bayesian methods in quantum mechanics, you should be worried about this kind of statement. Now, the Jaynes principle, or the Jaynes statistical inference scheme, is also called the Max End principle, the principle of maximum entropy. And so let me just tell you what that is. It's, Jaynes 1957. Here's the problem. You have a quantum system S, an observable B, another quantum system, and you have a constraint. The expectation value of your observable is some given value, lowercase b. So this is what you know about the system, and that's supposed to be all you know about the system. The task is to assign a state rho such that the constraint is satisfied. So you want to find a state rho such as trace rho b is equal to b, and the problem is there are many such states. So which one do you choose? And the Jaynes answer, the Jaynes principle is that among all states that satisfy the constraint, you should assign that state that has maximum entropy. That's the principle of maximum entropy, and that has been extremely useful and interesting in statistical mechanics. It allows one to actually derive all of thermodynamics in an essentially trivial way, in a very satisfying way. It also has been very, very useful in applied statistics. Now, how does that principle now clash with entanglement? So in order to present the Horodetsky example, let me just give you just brief notation here. So we're talking about entangled states, always about qubits. So we have Alice and Bob, each has a qubit, and we have entangled states. The four standard maximum entangled states form a basis, the Bell basis, they are psi plus minus and psi plus minus, famous states. And I also define these fat phi and psi operators. They are the projectors on the four Bell states. And in all what follows, it's either useful or just possible to restrict oneself to one's attention to so-called Bell diagonal mixed states. So these are states that are diagonal in the Bell basis. And I have these two representations for those, either written out or just as a matrix. So a matrix is always a matrix in the Bell basis. And now here's the Horodetsky example. So we have an operator, an observable B, and it's just this 1/2 sigma x cross sigma x plus sigma z cross sigma z can be rewritten. It's easy to see in this as a difference between two of the Bell projectors. And the constraint, stress rho b equal to 1/2. Now, this constraint, well, you can easily see that for Bell diagonal states, I mean, I've rewritten them here, the constraint is given by W4 minus W1 equal to 1/2. Because after all, let me see, here's this stick. The W1 component is the one that corresponds to psi minus, the W4 component here is the one that corresponds to phi plus. So this difference is just a difference of W4 minus W minus. So this must be 1/2. That's the only constraint we have. And given that, it's actually very easy to find the maximum entropy state. It's just a single parameter problem. Clearly, you can restrict yourself to Bell diagonal states in this problem. And the max n solution is this. So you see it's 1/16. You have the difference between these two matrix elements is 8. So the constraint is satisfied. Trace rho b is 1/2. And it's relatively easy to see that this is actually the max n sets. For instance, these two, of course, must have the same weight here because they're not affected. So changing the weight would reduce the entropy, for instance. And now the interesting thing, or the thing that will be most meaningful here, is that this state has distillable entanglement. So this is an entangled state. So that in itself, well, can accept that. But the Horodetsky has now found that there are states that also satisfy the constraint, which are separable, which are not entangled. So here's the Horodetsky state. This state here, 0, 1, 1, 2, also has a constraint. 2 minus 0 divided by 4 is 2, it's 1/2, so this state also satisfies the constraint. But it's very easy to see this is separable. This is a product state, or not a product state, sorry, it's a separable state, it's not entangled. And so here we have two different states. One is maxent, one is separable. Now, the Horodetsky said, well, this clearly is fake entanglement, because obviously this constraint does not imply that there is entanglement. So, and the condition that all you know is this, assigning an entangled state, is somewhat misleading. Well, the condition, the what you know does not imply entanglement, so it seems to be a wrong thing to assign an entangled state. So they propose a different state assignment scheme. They propose a scheme that you first minimize the entanglement, and then among all states with minimum entanglement, you maximize the entropy. So it's sort of min-max-end. End can mean entanglement, and entropy in this case is the min-max-end principle or something like this. Good question. It's not entirely clear to me why. I mean, they just said in their type of what I just said. They say this can't be right. I'm going to tell you what I think one could mean with this, and this will actually lead me to my. So this is their proposal here. Let's assign this state instead.
And that's the maximum entropy separable state?
That's the maximum entropy separable state. This is just at the boundary between, but it is, yeah. So here we are. Now, first of all, in a certain sense, there is nothing wrong, as you say, with assigning an entangled state in the situation. If you have a single system, I mean, fake entanglement, this is the Horodetsky name. If you have a single system, there's nothing wrong with assigning a max n state, because this is impossible here. Let's say you have one system described by the state rho j, and you would like to turn this into a maximally entangled state, one you could use for, say, teleportation or whatever. And you would like to do this on a single system with some probability, as small as you like, but positive. Well, this cannot be done. This is impossible. And therefore, there's no, I mean, you cannot use this entanglement you have assigned to the system here for anything definite. So no paradox or no contradictions can arise from this state assignment in the first place. So this is one important remark. And so I would like to go on to, well, this is very, pompously entitled The Nature of Entanglement, because this is only one small part of the nature of entanglement I'm talking about here. It's this question, does it make sense to say, in this situation you have this pair of particles, does it make sense to say the pair is entangled, is either true or false? because this might be one of the problems with this question. You have two possible, two proposals for state assignment, rho j and rho h. One is entangled, one is not. If you said, well, this pair is either entangled or not, this is a statement that can be given a truth value, then one of these state assignments is wrong and one is false. And you have sort of a problem. So I want to contrast this with a Bayesian view, in which entanglement is a state of belief, or a property of the system. And so this paradox is resolved in this sense. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to us say the state assignment is either right or wrong. Now, obviously, it's just a viewpoint. It's nothing that can be proved. The a philosophical viewpoint can, well, it's either useful or not. So what I would like to show in the rest of this paper is that this viewpoint is a starting point, actually leads to useful results. And obviously, anything, I mean, I'm not going to give you a few arguments for the Bayesian viewpoint, Bayesian interpretation of entanglement. All these arguments that follow can actually be viewed in a different light. And essentially, it's a matter, many of these things are a matter of taste. What I want to show is that this approach is actually useful. So there are three arguments that actually bolster the view that entanglement is a state of belief and not the property of a system. There's the Einstein argument. If entanglement were a system property, it could be created at a distance. The second one is the non-uniqueness of density operator decompositions, and the third one is that entanglement cannot be measured. Let me just go through these three arguments here. So here's the Einstein argument. This is, of course, means these are all very, very well-known things and examples. Here's a four-particle system. Carol has two of those, and one light year away, Alice and Bob have the other two, and they are in maximally entangled states. Both of these pairs, Carol is entangled with Alice and with Bob separately. Now, of course, the Alice and Bob state is just the maximally mixed state here, so Alice and Bob cannot use their two particles for anything in this situation. Now, Carol makes a Bell measurement. So you see this leads to entanglement swapping, obviously. Carol performs a Bell measurement, gets a result, one of the four Bell states, and hop, instantaneously, these two states here are maximally entangled. Well, I mean, if you don't believe in action at a distance, you say, well, obviously, this is just something that happens in Carol's head. Carol's knowledge, or Carol's set of belief is now that these are entangled. But for Alice and Bob, nothing changes. But I still have these maximally, this totally mixed state. So for me and for many people, I guess, it's much more natural to say, well, really, in this situation, it's just Carol's information that changes or Carol's belief that changes. It's not anything physical that changes on Alice and Bob's side. This is an old argument, but second one is about density operator decompositions. If you say, well, this state is either entangled or not entangled, you would say in this situation here, well, I mean, this is the same density operator, maximally mixed. It's just a mixture of four product states. This is a mixture of four maximally entangled states. This is the same thing. So would you say that this is unentangled and this is just entangled but we don't know it? Many of us wouldn't want to say that. And so it's a matter of taste, but it's an argument. And the third one is, actually my favorite, who do you ask? Carol has prepared a pair of qubits in some state. So Carol knows the thing. Now, if you want to know whether there's entanglement, what do? Do you ask the system or do you ask Carol? Of course, you ask Carol. So the entanglement is there and not in the system. Okay. So this is one possible answer. But the worry of the Horodeskis might actually have been something else. I mean, it's just probably not useful to speculate about this. But what if you have many copies of the system? If you assign the max n state to each of your many copies, thousands of copies, let's say, then there are entanglement purification schemes where with high probability, actually probability as close to one as you want, if your number of copies is large enough, you can end up with a smaller number of states which are maximally entangled. Now you have this high probability thing here, and this is a prediction that is clearly not implied by the constraint. So that might be the worry. Now, this is something actually which is a problem with the maximum entropy principle. And so let me just digress briefly to a classical situation. This is the problem is that if you have many, many copies of a system and you have this one copy information, one copy constraint, then it is not, well, the max ent principle does not say that you should actually assign this product state here. So this actually gives you this wrong conclusion. This is an old problem. I think that's something that Abner Shimoni pointed out as a criticism of the maximum entropy principle. And you can see this for a classical dice example here. Let's say you have the information, the constraint that the expectation value is 3.5. Well, that's what a good die should do. And the maximum max end probability assignment would be P of n equal to 1/6 for all six faces. That's obvious. But so this is certainly a good assignment for a single throw of the die. But if you have a very large number of throws, to make the IID assignment with these probabilities here, that would make a prediction that with a probability very close to 1, you get say, a frequency of, well, let's say 3, that is very close to 1/6. Well, it is not implied at all by this constraint here. So you see that this problem with the max-end assignment has nothing to do with entanglement. It's actually a classical problem. And so this leads me on to what I think is the right way to proceed in the situation here. What we have is a problem. We have a problem determining this constraint here. You have this, have many copies of a system. You have this constraint. The problem is to turn this constraint into probabilities on the multi-trial hypothesis space. You have n trials, and on this large hypothesis space, you want to assign probabilities. And, Jane's solution is that this problem is much simplified if you assume exchangeability, which is a standard property of a probability distribution, which is due to DeFinetti. He invented this in the 20s. And let me define this for quantum states. This is actually a nice example where the quantum formalism is much simpler than the classical formalism. To write down exchangeability and to write down these things, quantum mechanically is much easier than classically. So this is why I don't bother with the classical case here. So we say a state rho n of n systems, n copies of a system, is exchangeable if it is a member of an exchangeable sequence rho k. And an exchangeable sequence has this property. Each member of the sequence is connected to the next member of the sequence just by a partial trace. So rho k is obtained from rho k plus 1 by just tracing out the k plus first system, the k plus 1 system. And the main property, the more important one, is that each row k in the sequence is invariant under permutations. So all these state assignments are invariant under permutations. You can just permute them. So this is exchangeability, and this somehow captures the idea that you don't care in which order the systems come, and it also doesn't matter how many you have. I mean, it's not that you have to stop at some maximum number. You can have as many as you want. And these two conditions alone guarantee that you can write the state of the n systems in this compact form here. So rho is exchangeable, rho is exchangeable if and only if the state can be written in the form integral d rho p of rho rho tensor n, so as a mixture of n-fold tensor products of the same state. So this is a quantum version of the classical theorem by DeFinetti. And this probability p of rho here is non-negative and unique. So, starting from this, you can now work with quantum states in situations where you have just incomplete information about them. You have states about situations about which you don't know enough. You have not enough information to make a unique state assignment. Now, but we know that if you assume exchangeability, which just circumscribes a large class of problem you might be interested in, if you have exchangeability, you know you assign a state of this form here. Whereas P of rho is, well, you have certain conditions on this, but let's just say for the moment you have sent some P of rho here. quantum tomography, quantum state tomography, what would that be like in this Bayesian setting? Well, it's a very straightforward thing. You just measure one subsystem here, you get an outcome k for this measurement, and what you get now is a state for n minus one systems with an updated probability. And this updated probability here is just given by something that we could call the quantum Bayes rule. It's a very simple formula. So we have a very straightforward picture of what quantum tomography, quantum state tomography is in this context. This is important, and the formulation is important and interesting for the following reason, I believe. This makes clear that whenever you do this, you always start with some, well, necessary subjective prior information here. This P of rho, you always start from a prior state assignment. It is impossible to determine a quantum state or to do quantum state tomography starting with no prior information. And this is one of the tenets of any Bayesian theory. The prior information must be made explicit. And this is one of the strengths, I would say, of any Bayesian method, that prior information enters in an explicit way. And so, you get intersubjective results by just performing sufficiently many measurements so that the exact form of a prior here becomes irrelevant in the end. Let's see. So I just give you a very short, here's what the quantum Bayes rule is like. It's a very simple rule. It just looks exactly like the classical Bayes rule. This is a prior. This is the probability for getting the measurement outcome conditioned on rho, and fk is the p of em. So it's a very simple form for this.
What's quantum about it?
Well, this. So, we want to apply this to entanglement purification. So the task now is to start from information of this kind. I mean, this is now, let's say you have this information, the Horodetsky constraint, expression B of is equal to 1/2. You have many systems, and you want to come to distilled entanglement. Situation is, you just know, I mean, in a sense, you don't know whether it's entanglement or not. It's you have these many systems, you have this, this is all you know, and you want to know whether you can, or you want to try to distill entanglement. So what's the way to do this? And so what I'm going to describe is a variant of the famous one-way hashing protocol, which is due to Benjamin DiVincenzo, Smolin, and Wouters, and probably other, I don't know, and probably even more people on the, this is a long paper, a Fish of A paper. There's, I think, a Fish of Letter with more authors. The starting point, again, is to assign an exchangeable state rho n to the n systems. Now, this P of rho here, I mean, all we really need to make sure is two things for this P of rho. One of is the P of rho should have support only on those states, rho, that satisfy the constraint. That's the one thing. The other thing is the state P of rho should not exclude any state that satisfies the constraint. So in this sense, both the state assignments rho j tensor n and rho h tensor n would not be good because they exclude all kinds of possibilities. One makes a definite prediction there is no entanglement. The other one, we won't distill any. The other one makes a definite prediction you will distill entanglement. So this leaves everything open. The rest is, strictly speaking, subjective. There are rules of thumb of what might to do, what kind of initial prior distribution to assign, but really it's not quite important for what follows. So the details are really not important. Important thing is that you satisfy the constraint and you don't rule out anything that you think might be possible. The next step is a technicality which makes things very simple. It's a procedure called twirling, which makes the whole thing Bell diagonal. So this turns this general integral here in a parametrized one. W is, so I show you, so this is just go, so this interest W, and well, W are all Bell diagonal states, so this looks like this, and so the twirling results in a mixture of Bell diagonal states, so now we have this expression here. W is this vector of diagonal elements of this matrix here. This is the expression for the Bell diagonal state we had before. And what we also need in the following is the entropy of the state row W. And I mean, of course, the fundamental entropy of this density operator is just the Shannon entropy of the W's. So we now have a simpler situation. Well, I should say that this twirling operation is, I mean, you can actually do it by performing a random rotation on same random rotation on both sides of your bit. But in another sense, you could just say it was just ignoring part of the information you have. It's just a conceptual operation. You just work only with, you ignore all the off-diagonal elements. They might help you in some sense, but it turns out that they wouldn't help you that much anyway. So now here comes the next step. Next step is number three. We do quantum state tomography until this condition here is fulfilled for some eta, which shouldn't be too large, and some S naught less than one. So what's this condition? Condition is that when this integral here is the weight, the total weight or the total probability of our rho W's, of all those rho W's that have entropy greater than S naught. So I say that proportion one minus eta of all the states in my integral have entropy less than S naught. That's what I'm saying here. Of course, this step might fail. And it's fail with a probability, which you can, of course, easily write down. So in a sense, this is already a step that tells you whether you have a chance of achieving entanglement or not. And the method, well, is, oh, there it is. So this is the parameter eta that tells you how much of your support is on states that have entropy greater than S naught. Of course, the total entropy of such a state is 2 bits because it is a four-dimensional Hilbert space, is 2 qubits. Now comes a technical step. You define label states. I mean, this is all the formalism of the original hashing protocol here. These states, I just relabel these four Bell diagonal states, and I rewrite my expansion now as an expansion of products of those here. So now instead of having a P of W over these four parameters, I have now a probability of a sum on the probabilities of all these 2n-bit strings, which tell me which of the four Bell states I have in each case. So I have a little picture. Typical term in here looks like this. So one term in the sum looks like this. This is just n maximally entangled states, and these are, well, depending on these indices, each of these is one of the four Bell states. Okay. Next step. The final step, I do R so-called one-way hashing rounds. It's just an ingenious set of local unitary operations and measurements on one of the pairs. So each time you do one of these hashing rounds, you lose one of the pairs. You end up with a state rho n minus r, now of n minus r pairs of the same form. But now the thing is done in such a way that this p here, hopefully, is strongly peaked at exactly this string. And this string, all zeros, means that each of your pairs now is in a singlet state. And the Bayesian nature of this procedure is that at each step you do just Bayesian updating of this probability distribution here, of these probabilities. So your measurement result, just by doing the first ordinary, applying Bayes' rule, gives you a new probability P. And if you do it right, you actually get a probability that's peaked more and more at an all singlet state. So this is possible or because of a great theorem by Cisha and Kerner, which this I think was brought to the attention of the community by Richard Joseph and the Horodetskys in the paper on compression for states with unknown entropy. So the idea is the following: you have in the situation we have here, where this integral here is very small, eta, or just any relatively small number, eta. So this is the support of states with entropy less than S naught. Then I can, for any epsilon and delta, and sufficiently large, and I can find the set CK, Cisha Kerner, and this is a set CK of 2n-bit strings here, a set of strings which have these properties here. Once the number of elements of the set is bounded in this way here, so it's essentially equal to 2 to the n s naught, which in our case is important because it means it's less than 2 to the n, and the total number of strings is 2 to the 2n. So we have a very small proportion of the strings here. And the second thing says that these strings actually carry essentially all the weight. So the total probability of the strings, so this is the sum of the over all the strings in the set of the probabilities, is actually very close to 1. So a very small subset of the strings gives you all the probability. And so this is one generalization of the original protocol, which is made possible by this theorem here. So this is the core of the idea. This is why this works in the end. Finally, here is the asymptotic yield we get of this. So if I fix any S naught less than 1 number, then the probability of obtaining an asymptotic yield, well, asymptotic yield is the number of, in the asymptotic limit, the fraction of singlets you get. So if for any finite n, if m is the number of singlets you get of your n original states, and in the limit n to infinity, this would tend to limit, which is the asymptotic yield. So we get this particular asymptotic yield, 1 minus S naught, by using this combination of tomography and one-way hashing with this probability here. And here you see how the essentially prior information comes in again. This P of W here was our prior essentially subjective probability here. So this comes in and this in the end. So this probability right down here for getting a particular yield is essentially your own prior probability assignment. So you see that even in the situation where you have relatively vague information and where the probabilities you write down are necessarily subjective and contain prior judgments, you can actually perform an operation like entanglement purification in a straightforward way and come up with a good and useful answer. So essentially, this is the I think solution to the Horodetsky paradox. And just summarize this. So there's no conflict between Max and an entanglement. And exchangeability alone, as a precondition, guarantees that the entanglement purification protocols of hashing and recurrence, which I haven't talked about, can be carried out. And finally, I've given a Bayesian formulation of entanglement purification without many details, of course. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Rüdiger. Charlie?
Aren't you saying that if someone supplied you with a lot of identically prepared quantum systems that obeyed that constraint, you would have to do some additional measurements on some of them in order to find out whether you could distill a thing or not? That's what it sounded like. The tomography means you're really doing some additional measurements. And depending on their outcome, you are basically figuring out whether you have some James-type states or some Horodetsky-type states.
Well, it's not, I mean, the... Well, not really, because I will never actually get a peak here or there unless my prior information is of that kind. So all I do is, I mean, I hope that my tomography is going to shift my peak in some direction. And so as soon as my tails are such that I have a good hope of doing things right, I can start doing my hashing. So in a sense, I mean, there are two aspects to this. One is the fundamental question. You always have a distribution and not just a peaked state. So you have to ask the question whether the hashing protocol works in the situation. This is the fundamental, but maybe this is practically not terribly important, because you always say, well, if it's approximately this, then I'm just happy. The other aspect is that this is of practical relevance, because this gives you a way of finding out how long you need to do tomography before you start the hashing. So this can, I mean, if you do this, you get good ideas of, or you can actually define precisely what the optimal way of doing it would be. So you do so and so many steps of tomography until your eta is of a certain size, and then you start the hashing. So in this sense, this could actually even improve practice.
But it doesn't answer the question of whether you would be able to distill a lot of these things without having done this. You have to learn something more about it to answer.
You have to do a certain number of tomography steps before, yes. Unless your distribution is already of a kind where you have a tail that's small enough, yes.
Yes.
And your boarding process, that involves maximum eight-handed state.
Which process?
After the second state, the boarding is defined. Mm-hmm. So how will you generate this for multi-partite systems?
I actually don't know how. I mean, the question is, how do you generalize? Well, the most particular question is, how do you generalize the twirling operation that gives you Bell diagonal states in your expansion to multipartite entanglement? And I think the more general question is, how do you do entanglement purification for multipartite system? And I mean, I don't know the answer.
Yes.
You and Carl have written another paper about entanglement, which has interested me tremendously. And now you say that entanglement is a belief and not a measurable property. This paper was about entanglement in NMR systems, showing that when the temperature is too low or too high, excuse me, then there is no entanglement in the system. Can you comment on that paper in light of this?
Well, obviously, there are many situations where the state you write down, where you have a lot of information about the system, and so it's clear what state you write down, your theory gives you that state. So it's very different from this one, where you have a single system with a kind of a vague information, and here, where you have a theory that tells you exactly what state you assign a large number of particles in this.
If you apply the quantum definitive theorem to that system and say that you have, say, molecules or whatever, which are creating for you in fact, somewhat of a preferred ensemble.
Well, the states you have in NMR actually are exchangeable, so they're of definitive form.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with that. This applies. I mean, in a sense, in a situation like this, there's actually no difference at all between a situation. It doesn't matter whether you regard your system, your state as a property of the system, or as a state of belief. But in situations like this, it's clear that regarding the state as a system property leads you into trouble. So you have two kinds of situations, one where you don't get a difference, and this is this situation, one where you actually are better off being clear about prior information and what the states mean.
Any more comments or questions? If not, that concludes the session.